expected to see free.
Quiet, please, ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Look, if you hate cops just because they're cops, the next time you get in trouble, call a crackhead.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
Then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Tuesday. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and your emails. And I want to tell you something. The latest news today, and this is a big deal. If you have lost somebody to fentanyl addiction or perhaps to a fentanyl overdose, the Chinese Communist Party is knee-deep in funding it, in subsidizing it, in giving tax incentives to it. And that's not just my conclusion. That's the conclusion of a brand new report that just hit the news this morning. The Chinese Communist Party, the Chinese government, is involved in the production of fentanyl and fentanyl precursor chemicals and their export to the United States or to Mexico on their way to the United States. I'm going to give you the details on that in just a moment. First, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it happens right here every day. And if you want to take part, it's 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, we're going to put you right to the head of the list at 866-439-5277. You can send your emails to talk at LarsLarson.com and vote in our poll on X. We try to make that question every day. My producers and I, we put together a question out of the news of the day. So I want to ask it to you this way, because I really think this should be your decision. Should Americans allow Joe Biden to tap into America's emergency oil reserves again? He did it 2 years ago for the last election. Should he be allowed to tap into those emergency reserves in order to help him and other Democrats win in November in an election? My answer to that would be no. And if you say, well, has Joe announced that yet? No, he hasn't announced it yet. But the oil analysts, the folks who are in the business, have said he's not going to have much any other way to bring gasoline prices down. They're pointing out that gas prices are starting to spike again. Now, they spiked at one point to above $5 a gallon nationwide average. But as one of the analysts at the Macquarie Group points out, there are not many tools available. This one is the most effective. So he might bring the price of gas down by 10 or 20 cents. That's what happened the last time. Except consider why we put those emergency oil reserves aside. The Strategic Petroleum Reserve is actually the name of it. Joe Biden tapped into that for hundreds of millions of barrels to flush that oil into the economy and moderate gas prices just a bit. The gas prices that he had caused to spike because he declared war on the oil companies, not just during his presidency, but even during the campaign. There was one great exchange during a town hall in which the moderator asked Joe Biden, then a candidate for president, Mr. President, you've said you're going to end the oil business in America. Are you willing to do that even when you know that it's going to be at the cost of hundreds of thousands of American jobs? We can play the soundbite for you if you'd like. And Joe Biden said, absolutely. He has declared war on oil. And he took all of those actions and he did that in the early part of 2021. And by the summer, the oil prices were spiking. Now, of course, Joe later on would say all of that was caused by the invasion of Ukraine by Russia. The problem is the invasion of Ukraine by Russia happened in the winter of 2022. The oil and gasoline prices started going up in the summer of 2021. So there's a little bit of a mismatch. So should Joe Biden be allowed to tap into emergency supplies for America that are supposed to be there in case we have a civil disaster, a natural disaster like a hurricane or an earthquake or something else that causes a problem with getting oil supplies to the United States? And consider the position that we're in about 3 years into Joe Biden's presidency. We've got a Middle East that could be on fire. We've already seen the starting shots of what could end up being a war between Iran and Israel in which the United States and Russia might get dragged into that as well. Do you suppose that might disrupt some of the oil supplies that come from the Middle East? And if you say, but America's self-sufficient for oil. Well, we were self-sufficient under Donald Trump. President Trump made sure that was one of his goals. He delivered on that promise. Joe Biden promised to declare war on the oil business, and he did everything he could to shut down new federal leasing of lands to drill for oil, to try to retard the production of more gasoline and diesel, to not give any kind of incentives to companies to increase their refinery capacity. He also sent messages to Wall Street and the financial markets saying, you don't want to put all money in the oil business because we're going to end the oil business in about a decade. And if you don't believe me, go back and watch Joe's State of the Union address, not this year, but in previous years. He literally got a laugh out of members of Congress when he said, in 10 years, we won't even need oil anymore. So apparently he thinks he can burn down America's emergency supplies, even as we have the possibility of war with Russia, the possibility of a Middle East war, the possibility of a China war over Taiwan. And we're going to take our emergency cupboard and empty it even more. That makes no sense to me at all. So the poll on X, should Americans let Joe Biden tap into the country's emergency oil reserves to help him win an election? I'd say no. You can answer any way you like. But let me get back to this brand new report out today. And where does it come from? It is a months-long investigation by the House Committee on China. And what did they find? Quote, the committee's work has uncovered persuasive evidence that the PRC, People's Republic of China, and the CCP, the Communist Party, Chinese Communist Party, are not just bystanders. They are prime movers in the fentanyl trade. They are knee-deep in actively sponsoring, encouraging, and facilitating the production and export of fentanyl and fentanyl precursors for distribution in the United States. Now, that came out from the House Select Committee on the Chinese Communist Party. And as they quote, many of these substances are illegal under the PRC's own laws, and they have known legal use worldwide. Like its export tax rebates for legitimate goods, the CCP is subsidizing illegal drugs with incentives for international synthetic drug sales from the People's Republic of China. The CCP has never disclosed this program. So I'd put the question to you this way. This report out of the House Select Committee on the Chinese Communist Party finds that the CCP owns part of several Chinese companies that are tied into drug trafficking, that they impede U.S. investigations into manufacturers that produce fentanyl and precursors. They allow open sales of the drugs on the Chinese internet, which, by the way, the CCP controls like with an iron fist, and fails to censor online content on narcotics set to be exported. Notably, the Chinese government censors content about domestic drug sales, but they don't do it for export drug sales. So China has declared a chemical war with fentanyl on the United States. The House committee has reported on this. Joe Biden knows about it. But I'd point out to you, all those millions of dollars that the Chinese paid to the Biden crime family back when Joe was vice president, they are paying off handsomely today. Back in a moment, I'll get to your calls at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
John Kennedy gets it.
Mr. President, you just got to try harder not to suck.
Well said, Mr. Kennedy. We agree. This is the Lars Larson Show.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That's great moment every day, where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead fish wrapper or mainstream media bias.
In a presidential election year, we've come to expect political protests from the far left. Yesterday, up and down the West Coast, protests shut down major freeways and bridges. 4 years ago, the excuse for Antifa and BLM riots was the pandemic. Those mostly peaceful protests included 36 murders and literally billions of dollars in property damage. This time, protesters did their deeds in the name of the Islamic terrorist group Hamas. Believe it or not, they're supporting terrorism. I-5 shut down for about 45 minutes near Eugene, 52 arrests. Terrorist enablers blocked traffic to SeaTac Airport for hours, 46 people arrested. The Bay Area saw both the Golden Gate and Oakland Bay Bridges shut down for hours. Chicago got hit too. All of those actions tied up tens of thousands of people in traffic and could have easily put lives at risk by blocking emergency vehicles. Every one of those cities has lots of cops and lots of buses and lots of zip cuffs. You certainly have a constitutional right to peaceably protest. You don't have a right to block major freeways and bridges. Since we can expect more of this nonsense in aid of failing Joe Biden's reelection bid, all the protesters should get is a quick trip to jail and the toughest penalties the law allows. Glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. Send emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And Ann writes in with our question of the day. Talk about proof of a biased press. The Sunday Oregonian opinion section. The Democrats got a lot of coverage, but they could not recommend any of the three Republican candidates for Secretary of State as viable candidates based on the questions about shoring up faith in our election system. Wow. The left are unable to listen to the conservative side in our state. They're judging from their lens and not receptive to the concerns of mainstream middle Americans, at least the ones that are awake and aware of what's happening now. Please address this on your show. Signed, Ann White. And I agree with you. I mean, this is sad when you've got the major press organizations that always support the left. Very, very rarely will they say anything good about a conservative. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now.
I'm going to give a couple of grills out today. One was suggested by Lee Cobb, who said, Lars, the grill of the day should go to Lori Chavez DeRino. I mean, DeRemer, for voting in favor of the FISA renewal, that's Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, without warrants. I don't know anybody who'd want to be spied on without a search warrant. It seems she only represents the big government lovers and not her local constituents. But the second one I want to point out to you, dishonesty should be punished by the voters turning down new school levies. For example, parents and staff at Salem Kaiser Public Schools are angry about something. The school district just agreed to a big new contract with the teachers for more money than they could afford. This pattern is throughout the Northwest. Portland Public Schools did it. Seattle schools have done it. They promise more money than they know that they're going to have. And then they turn to the public and say, well, now we have no choice but to cut a whole bunch of teachers and other staff. In the case of Salem Kaiser Public Schools, they're talking about total cuts of all staff of around 400. In other words, give the teachers what they want, even if you don't have the money. And then when the bill comes, just tell the taxpayers, I'm sorry, we're going to have to hurt your children and deliver less education. Unless, of course, you want to give us more money. We're tired of that game. We're going to say no the next time you propose a levy. And today's best email, but you can always send more, to talk@LarsLarson.com. Steve wrote in, Lars, I was listening to your show yesterday about the offshore wind farms off the coast of Oregon. I work for a company that has been subcontracted by a subcontractor. Our study will start on July 1st, study of offshore windmills. Supposed to be complete by the end of September. Contract says July 1 through September. Millions will be made by these contractors for this study, paid for by the taxpayers, and the idea will not get off the ground, just like the Interstate Bridge. Signed, Steve. Steve, I appreciate the email, and I think you're absolutely right. Off the coast, the East Coast of America, there were literally four of the biggest wind farm projects being proposed. And they were backed by four major energy companies. One of them was BP. And all of them, all four of those, backed away from it, said the numbers don't make sense. We can't even break even on this, not even with all the federal subsidies that are included. And they walked away. Now, if the economics of offshore wind do not work off the East Coast of the United States, is there any amazing difference between the East Coast and the West Coast that would make it make sense financially on the West Coast when it didn't make sense on the East Coast? And that's even with massive amounts of federal taxpayer subsidies. To your calls now. Let's start out with Bill. Hey, Bill, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Thank you, Lars. Appreciate you taking the call. About Joe wanting to tap into the strategic oil reserve, I spent my career in the oil and gas industry. ExxonMobil refinery in Baytown, Texas, processes over 500,000 gallons a day.
Yeah.
There are other refineries, Shell, BP, ARCO, that processes hundreds of thousands of barrels a day.
Yeah.
Now,
and
Joe wants to tap into the strategic reserve. It would have little, if any, effect on prices because he can't produce 500,000 barrels a day from the strategic reserve.
The only Bill, the economist said, I didn't buy it, but the economists have said that the last time he did this, when he pulled out almost a third of what America has in his strategic reserve, which is 200 million barrels of what he pulled out in 2022, they figure it might have had maybe 25 cents a gallon effect on the price of gas. So if you're saying even if he pulls more oil out, he can't possibly get it run through the refineries quickly enough, apparently the presence of that oil 2 years ago did bring prices down by a small amount, about 25 cents a gallon, when it comes to the pump price of gas. I think the more important question is, why do we have that reserve to begin with? It's supposed to have up to 700 million barrels in it. It was not full when Joe started tapping into it in 2022. He took out almost a third of everything in the emergency supply. And then when the Congress earlier this year said, put the oil back in, we'll give you money to replenish that oil supply, for whatever reason, the Biden administration said no. And now the oil industry analyst whose job it is to forecast what's going to happen, not just with oil, but what's the government going to do? They're looking at this and they are fully expecting that in the next couple of months, as we hit the summer driving season and as oil prices, gasoline prices are going up, that the administration is going to look for the easiest way to bring them back down. Because when oil prices go up, you're going to make a lot of people unhappy. And Joe Biden wants people to be happy. He wants them to see lower gas prices and give him the credit and then give him a vote in November. He's going to try to buy votes the same way he's trying to buy votes by paying off student loans with your money and putting your country at risk. You've got the Lars Larson
Show. The Lars Larson Show. You are in control.
Our Constitution is a document in which we, the people, tell the government what it is allowed to do.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you and a real pleasure to welcome from the great state of Florida, Congressman Matt Gaetz. And I've got about 20 questions and I know I've got room for about five. Congressman, welcome back.
Good to be with you, Lars. Though we are in the thick of the fight right now to stop this Congress from sending tens of billions of dollars to foreign countries in the absence of real answers on our nation's border. That's why I'm grateful for the chance to chat with you, because we need the American people in this fight to put the priorities of our nation before squabbles all over the world.
I endorse that altogether. In fact, Congressman, I should have worn my defund Ukraine shirt today, but I didn't. Let me ask you this. The White House has said Joe Biden is unwilling to take a standalone Israel bill and a standalone Ukraine bill. Is this the White House saying, I know I can't get the American people to get behind this, and I don't think the American people are wanting to get their tens of billions to go to Ukraine. But at the very least, Joe Biden could say, well, let's have a vote on each one and see which one is supported by the people's representatives. The fact that he's not willing to do that, he's admitting the American people don't want the funding of Ukraine, and they certainly don't want it tied in to the funding of what's going on in Israel, right?
You and I have long discussed the need for single subject bills. However you feel about Ukraine or the border or Israel, those questions do deserve their own dignity and their own vote. But I am going to push back a little at you, Lars, and suggest it's actually something different. In fact, okay. I think it's actually the opposite of what you said. I think the real reason Joe Biden wants to sign one bill with Israel and Ukraine together is so that progressive Democrats won't hold him accountable for signing the Israel provision.
Oh, I see.
Ukraine,
it protects him.
That's the poison pill. I actually think that Joe Biden believes if he signs an Israel-only bill that he will lose Michigan.
Yeah, because he's got all the Muslims in Dearborn who are saying, we won't vote for you, and he's more concerned about that than keeping the rest of his party or the rest of America happy?
I worry that that is indeed the case, and I am sympathetic to the plight of Israel. They're our ally in a pretty dangerous neighborhood. I don't think that it makes us stronger to borrow money from China to give it to Israel. How about this, Lars? The $20 billion that Israel's asking for is about our contribution to the U.N. How about we defund the U.N., participated in the attack on Israel, and then use that to ensure that Hamas is defeated and Iran is deterred?
Well, how about, I would go for that one in a heartbeat, Congressman Gates. I'd also go for the idea of saying, let's reimpose the sanctions on Iran. Joe Biden, correct me if I'm wrong, is the guy who's paid for the drones and the missiles that just got dropped in the direction of Israel, most of them intercepted, right?
Isn't that the disappointing pattern that we see over and over again, where the United States taxpayer somehow ends up funding all sides of every war in the Middle East? And in this case, indeed, Joe Biden has really unlocked the economic potential of Iran to do grave damage around the world because he was so interested in fiddling. You know, he wanted to harm Russia so much that he was willing to create great economic opportunity for Iran and for Venezuela. So, you know, I think that Joe Biden's priorities are clear. The question is, what will House Republicans fight for? And let me propose something. I don't think we should even send a Mother's Day resolution over to the Senate unless it has included in it a requirement that only U.S. citizens vote in U.S. elections. Right now, you just saw the court strike down Maricopa County's efforts to try to have election integrity and not let all these illegals vote. Because they say it's a question only Congress can address. I think we should attach to every single bill a requirement that only U.S. citizens vote in U.S. elections.
I'm for that. And Congressman, correct me if I'm wrong, but here's, I use a crayon and construction paper to connect these dots. But Congress gives money to the U.N. The U.N. gives money to NGOs. The NGOs use the money to now print up flyers that are telling every illegal or many illegals coming across the border, here's some cash from the friendly NGO that they got from the U.N., that they got from Congress. Oh, and by the way, specifically, vote for Joe Biden when you get to America. And they're printing these up and hanging them out to illegals as they're coming into our country illegally.
Yeah, the U.N. is involved in the invasion of America, and they were involved in the attack on Israel. And so why, you know, we would continue to fund them is really beyond me. But there's a fear that captures congressional Republicans at times, the fear that if we do anything to demand leverage, that if Kyiv falls or if there's a bad outcome in the Middle East, we'll just be blamed for everything. And the fear of blame drives people to suboptimal legislative choices. And what I am trying to instill is some sense of courage, that the hill to die on is not the border in Ukraine, and frankly, it's not even the border in Israel. It's the border in America. We are Americans. And it's not like we don't know how to do this, Lars. It's just returning to the Trump policies. Remain in Mexico, detain or remove, safe third country, and we don't parole millions of people into the country wherever they want to go at U.S. taxpayer expense.
Joe Biden today has every single tool available to him that Donald Trump had. Donald Trump produced record low illegal entry. Joe Biden has promoted record high entry, correct?
There were 250,000 people just last month, Lars. 250,000 people in a month. And now we've started to see the communications that have gone out to some of the places providing housing. Make sure you get these people registered to vote. Make sure you get them a social security number. Make sure you get them in a system. And it is the theft of our democracy before our very eyes, created by the very people who keep lecturing us about how they're the vanguards of democracy.
I'm talking to Congressman Matt Gaetz from the 1st Congressional District in Florida. Let me get to one other issue I want to get to for sure, and that's FISA. I don't for the life of me understand why. Why did we get Republican support for a FISA bill that only needed one more, well, at least one more thing, but this is where we'd start. If you're going to spy on Americans, you have to have a warrant. How did we fail to stop that?
Well, first, I do want to note, they wanted to extend FISA for 5 years. Now, why is that important? Because they wanted to punt it beyond the Trump presidency. And so while we didn't get everything we wanted, and certainly fell short, we were able to chisel 60% of that authorization off. And now this ripens again during the Trump presidency when we've got the opportunity to actually see our reforms enacted. Because remember, none of the reforms have their own force of law. They don't have their own fiat. And the FBI was breaking the law 287,000 times in 1 year. So they were breaking the law 38 times an hour, Lars, 38 times an hour. So we did come one vote short of the warrant requirement. My gosh, I mean, losing's no good. I hate to lose. Gosh, if we'd have gotten one more vote, this would have been an enormous win because it would have constrained the deep state from collection on American citizens when they don't have a warrant. And really what they want is they want one envelope of Fourth Amendment protections in real life. And then they want a diminished Fourth Amendment for your texts, calls, and digital communications. I believe in one Fourth Amendment for all Americans, and really that is what our country's been founded on, these constitutional principles.
It's just hard to imagine an FBI so corrupt that says the hill we want to die on, we want the right to spy on Americans in the name of watching foreigners.
Yeah, let's remember, nobody is making the argument that some Central Asian cave, some non-American is worthy of any Fourth Amendment protection.
Nope.
Spy on them all you want, collect all of their information. But when someone in a foreign country is communicating with an American citizen, that is called an incidental collection. That's fine, but then if you want to use the information you've derived by that collection against an American, just get probable cause, get a warrant. And by the way, the searches that these folks were doing, it was creepy stuff. They were...
Matt, I've got to cut it off at that point. That's Congressman Matt Gaetz from Florida. Back in a moment. We'll be glad to get your phone calls and emails. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Guys.
Senator John Kennedy on the Washington establishment.
The Washington establishment is working harder than an ugly stripper to cover up whatever happened.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show on a Tuesday and the Radio Northwest Network, proudly serving the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho for about the last quarter of a century. Glad to have you with me. And if you want to join the conversation, it's 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5. Send emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. And I get an interesting reply on social media to our question on the poll on X today. Should citizens let Joe Biden tap America's emergency oil reserves now again to help him win? The analysts in the oil business are saying that's about the only place Joe Biden could go, and they expect that he will probably do that again. And I'll give you a couple of signals of that. Number one, when Joe Biden began drawing down our strategic petroleum reserve, the emergency supply of oil that we have as a country in case there is either a war, a natural disaster, or a civil emergency of some kind, or say war in the Middle East that disrupts supplies of oil, you have an emergency supply. It can hold as much as 710 million barrels of oil. It was not full because Donald Trump, as president, had asked the Congress, hey, oil prices are low. Why don't we top off that emergency supply now while oil is about 30 bucks a barrel? And the Congress turned him down. Now, the Democrats said, we're not going to let Donald Trump do anything. Joe Biden comes in, and oil prices, gasoline and diesel, went up in the summer of 21. He blamed it on the war that started in the winter of 22, which doesn't exactly match up. But he began to tap into that in 2022 in hopes that he could pull off a win in the 2022 elections for the midterm elections. And he drew it down by about 200 million barrels, about one third of what we had in that supply. And now the analysts are expecting him to do it again this year because oil prices are once again going up again, even though Joe Biden said 3 years ago that all this inflation stuff and rising gas prices, that it was transitory, that it was temporary, and like most of the other things that come out of that guy's mouth, was a big fat lie. So I said, should citizens let Joe Biden tap into America's emergency oil reserves? Now, I got a reply from a young lady. I think it's a young lady, didn't use her real name, Jane Doe. And she said, oh, Lars, you must not understand anything. This is not about what the people will let him do. And I said, are you really seriously taking the position that public pressure has no effect on American presidents? I mean, we were just talking a few minutes ago, literally on this show, about the fact that a few Muslims in Michigan have scared Joe Biden to death because he's afraid he'll lose the state of Michigan over what? Over whether or not he signs an aid to Israel bill. Now, if a few Americans in one state can put the fear of God in the United States president, do you suppose if Americans said, Joe Biden, don't you dare touch any of that emergency supply. That's there for an emergency. Your failure in the polls is not an emergency. I mean, I could point to dozens of examples where public pressure has kept American presidents from doing things that they actually promised to do. And that's a good thing. The fact that presidents and to some extent Congress actually listen to the public is a good thing. So, should citizens let Joe Biden tap into the reserve? I'd say no to it. You can answer it any way you like. At Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Now, our failure to confine violent criminals, even teenage violent criminals in the Northwest, is getting people killed. Now, let me back that up, and I'll give credit to King 5 out of Seattle. A 16-year-old is now suspected of shooting and killing a 15-year-old in Renton over the weekend. And if you say, well, Lars, what's the name of the suspect? Say, I can't tell you, because law enforcement will not tell us who that 16-year-old is, because they say, well, he may be suspected of shooting somebody to death, but we can't invade his privacy as a 16-year-old child. And who's the 15-year-old who got killed? We don't know that either. But he was on electronic home monitoring because he'd been involved in an alleged drive-by 5 months before. So 5 months ago, this 16-year-old is hauled into court, and they allow him to go home with an electronic monitor to keep an eye on an electronic eye on him, and he's released, and he goes home. And now he's suspected of shooting and killing a 15-year-old. And, you know, his lawyers literally walked into court on this one this week and said, we'd like him to be sent home on home monitoring again. And what these sleazy lawyers said, we want his bail set at $10,000 with a cash alternative of 10% of that. In other words, they wanted to be able to let his mom or dad or somebody else post $1,000 and he'd be allowed to go home on a home monitor, the same status that he was in when he is now accused of shooting and killing a 15-year-old. Danny, we're close to the break, so we got to get to it quick. What's on your mind?
Hi, Mr. Larson. I just wanted to call about the Section 702 bill. I called FISA. You a couple months ago. Yes, the FISA bill. I called you a couple months ago, and you said you had hoped they were going to change it.
Yes.
And I said I wanted it done away with.
Well, that is not likely. And I want them to surveil foreign nationals who are posing a threat to America. But I want them to say, if you want to surveil Americans, you should have a warrant. Do you want no surveillance of foreign nationals planning terrorism against America?
No, of course not.
Okay, very good. Back in a moment.
The Lars Larson.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Look, if you hate cops just because of the cops, the next time you get in trouble, call it crackhead.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
And then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. You know, I hear a lot of lies in my line of work, and I hear those lies, but one of the ones that I've heard for the longest period of time is the one that says, without millions and millions of illegal aliens, why America's economy simply could not function. Now, the fact that I've heard that lie for decades, I think it is provably untrue, and we're hearing it now as well. And we're hearing it from, among other places, a member of Congress, member of the Democrat Party, and that would be Val Hoyle, who has a lot of problems. I mean, she's got corruption problems. She's under investigation. But she also has an opponent who's willing to call that lie out. And that is Air Force veteran Monique Despain, who's running for the U.S. Congress in Oregon's 4th Congressional District to replace the corrupt Val Hoyle. Now, Monique may not call her corrupt. I will call her corrupt. But one of the things she's done recently is she went to the southern border of the United States. And like most Democrats, what she saw there was all of the necessary workers to keep America running. And she literally told people that an open border is necessary and that illegal aliens are needed in America. Let me ask Monique Despain, what should we make of that, Monique?
Well, our Oregon Congresswoman is distinguishing herself in the national news now for this outrageous, I would say, dangerous position that she insists on foisting on the Oregonians, literally saying that we need this movement through the border. She was down in El Paso, Texas in February and just gushing with how operations were going smoothly, processing hundreds and hundreds of people a day, when a month later, the Texas National Guard was attacked by those very immigrants. I guess just mowing down the Texas National Guard to get to the jobs that Val Hoyle wants to offer in Oregon.
By the way, I'm talking to Monique Despain, who's running for Congress. Tell people where to find you on the web, on social media, so they can help your campaign.
MoniqueForCongress.com.
Thanks. Now, one of the things I want to push back on, could I talk you into this, Monique? Could we stop calling them immigrants? And let me tell you why. There are immigrants to America, more than a million a year, who come in legally. It's very tough. It's expensive. It's time consuming. It often takes years to come here legally. And I call those people immigrants, which America does need. To mix them up with people who've just come across the border illegally, unverified, unvetted, everything else, and not intending to abide by our laws. To call them both by the same name is like calling a pharmacist and a crack dealer as both members of the pharmaceutical trade. You know, you say,
oh,
well,
I agree.
I know, I think it's insulting to real immigrants to describe any of these illegal alien border hoppers as immigrants. Can we agree on that?
Absolutely. I talk to legal immigrants every week who are offended, just as you say. Well, FBI Director Chris Wray, he's calling them dangerous individuals coming across our southern border. He's calling them criminals. He's calling them members of ISIS. He's calling them a national threat. So, yeah, I think we should be calling them something different than immigrants.
Okay, fair enough. Now, what do we do about this? Is Val Hoyle going to be willing to debate you on these issues? Because I can't imagine how she's going to defend the idea that she has said it's on a YouTube video of her in which she says, I get out to the most conservative parts of my district and I humanize and bring this issue right down to what matters. In other words, she's happy to go to parts of the state of Oregon that she represents as a member of Congress and explain to them why illegal aliens are going to come in, and she wants them to come in to take the jobs of some of her constituents.
She literally says that part of her job as a congresswoman is to get out among the conservative part of her district, which, by the way, is the bulk of the district. Congressional District 4 is conservative in large part, and that her job is to break through the disinformation and misinformation about the border crisis. And like I said, FBI Director Chris Wray is testifying regularly that we are in a, that he calls it a threat that has reached a whole other level, he says. But our congresswoman ignores that, and she's going to school conservatives when they say to her, quote, why don't you just shut down the border? And she says, well, I need to point out that we need this movement, that we need the workforce. And I will ask her in debates that I look forward to, when she says that this open flow has to happen, why isn't she putting some energy into developing the workforce in Oregon? How are we going to address the housing crisis when we have American citizens that do have full-time jobs that can't afford housing? Where is she going to house her illegal immigrants and criminals that we just, I just said, there's a whole category of people that she would like to welcome to Oregon.
And by the way, Monique, she's a member of a lawmaking body. That's what the Congress does. So there are laws that say this is the way to come into the United States illegally. These are all the ways you would come in illegally. If she thinks the laws are wrong, then change them. Except at this point, nobody in Congress, or not nobody, but not a majority of Congress, believe we should change the laws and make people who simply walk into the United States legal residents of the country. And if that's what she believes should be done, propose the bill and see how far it gets.
She's promoting the Dignity Act. Have you heard of that?
It basically
codifies.
Describe it for the audience, if you would, Moni.
Well, it basically codifies everything that's happening now. And pays for it, and has to send millions, billions of dollars to the border to fund NGOs that will process people in an orderly way. So basically, imagine it just continues to be as it is now, but it's legalized, and it's a lot easier to get resources to these illegal immigrants. It's the Dignity Act, and that's what she and her Democrat colleagues were promoting when they met in El Paso, and she made these remarks.
Can you imagine the cost? I mean, Denver, Colorado, for instance, figures it has 40,000 illegals there right now, and they figure they have already spent $170 million serving the needs of these illegals who aren't even supposed to be there, and they're telling their own residents, by the way, we're going to have to cut back police services, park services, community services, and education because we have to pay the costs of all these people. I can't wait for Americans to stand up and say, don't you give those people one more dime. You take care of our needs first, and their needs can be taken care of when they come back legally. Because I think Americans are going to hit a boiling point and say, you're taking things from us, and they're doing it in New York and Chicago and everywhere else. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, it's unsustainable. It was a year ago, at least, I think, that I heard the mayor of New York saying it was costing New York $800 million a month. And that was, like I say, almost a year ago that he stated that. He's a very liberal mayor. He said, we're going to lose our city. And that's happening. It's happening in Oregon. And at the same time that Congresswoman Val Hoyle wants to increase the restrictions on accessing our natural resources, which are the major source of revenue for these our communities in CD4, for law enforcement, for education, at the same time she's reducing access to those resources, she wants to increase the need by welcoming hundreds and thousands of illegal immigrants.
Absolutely right. That's Monique Despain, Monique for Congress. That's Monique Despain, who's running for the Congress against the very corrupt Democrat Val Hoyle, who's in the 4th District now. Back in a moment, we're going to talk about how Democrats are raising the alarm about vote by mail. Believe it or not, that's next.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show.
Try that in a small town.
Welcome back to the program. I got to tell you something. I hate vote by mail. I absolutely hate it. And I've hated it more over recent years. So I want to point something out that's an interesting phenomenon. The Democrats have used vote by mail to cheat for a long, long time. And I say that as somebody who's been forced, based on where I live, into using vote by mail for decades. And I think it's routinely used to cheat in elections. But now the Democrats are raising the alarm about problems they see with voting by mail. Now that it's harder for them to cheat, and now that they can see the flaws in there might actually cost them some elections. I want to get into the details of that in a moment. First, you're welcome to join the show. If you want to join what we call the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, that is, you disagree with my point of view, maybe you think vote by mail is the best thing since canned beer, well, by all means, call the show. We'll put you right to the head of the list at 866-439-5277. Send emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. We put up a brand new poll every day on X. We also duplicate that on our website. Vote once, please. It is a conservative show, so we only believe in voting once. Should citizens allow Joe Biden to tap into America's emergency oil reserves again? The same way he did in 2022 to help him try to win this fall. Now, he hasn't yet announced that he's going to do this, but oil industry analysts are expecting that that's going to be his next move because gas and gasoline and diesel prices are on their way up again. And what the oil analysts say is the Biden administration will likely need to tap into oil from the country's emergency reserves to counter a spike in gasoline prices amid inflation fears, especially during the summer driving season. So I think that what Joe Biden did to America 2 years ago was absolutely criminal. The Strategic Petroleum Reserve can hold a little bit more than 700 million barrels, which sounds like a lot. Until you find out that our daily usage of oil is about 18 million barrels. Now, the likelihood that America would be cut off from all sources of oil when we have a lot of domestic sources is low. But could we have a major disruption where, say, oil being shipped here from the Middle East would be, disrupted by what's going on in the Middle East? Could we have a disruption because of problems with China? In a war over Taiwan, could we have a disruption because of Russia? And in fact, because of bombing that's being done by the Ukrainians in their war with Russia and the invasion by Russia of Ukraine, yeah, that could all affect it. In fact, the worldwide oil supply is something that can be affected by a lot of other factors. So does it make sense that even when the strategic oil reserve was not full, Donald Trump offered Congress the chance to fill it up when oil was cheap? The idiot Democrats in Congress said no, they would not let him refill the reserve, even though it made complete sense back when oil was 30-some dollars a barrel. Now it's about $80 a barrel, either just above or just below. And so that's a problem. It wasn't full when Joe Biden tapped into it in 2022, when he did not have an emergency on his hands. He reduced the amount in the supply by about one third, by about 200 million barrels. And he never replaced the oil, even though Congress in the early part of this year, January, had actually said to the administration, we'd like you to refill the reserve. Here's the money to go out and buy the oil much more expensively. And Joe Biden's administration said, no, we're not going to refill the reserve right now. Well, now you wonder, is Joe Biden then going to say, well, then we're going to tap into it again because high gas prices this summer are not going to make for happy voters. So we want to start tapping into it again. But let me get back to vote by mail. And I'll tell you something about why I hate vote by mail, because fraud is likely. And fraud is almost impossible to detect depending on how they do the fraud. And I want to cite something that's cited by a number of people, Donald Trump among them. But Trump, within the last couple of years, had said during an interview, he said even Jimmy Carter told people, don't use vote by mail. Well, he didn't use exactly those words, but that was the essence of it. Let me give you a piece of the Carter-Baker Commission that looked at voting, all voting issues, about 15 years, almost 20 years ago now. And what did they say? Absentee ballots, meaning vote by mail, remain the largest source of potential voter fraud. Now, You say, hold on a second, that was Jimmy Carter. So Trump was right. Well, Jimmy Carter never said don't use vote by mail. What he did say is if there's going to be fraud, the greatest potential source of voter fraud is in vote by mail, meaning absentee ballots on a large scale. And the Carter Baker report said absentee voting is vulnerable to abuse. Ballots sent to the wrong address, intercepted. Citizens subject to intimidation if they vote at home or in a nursing home or at work. So what did the Democrats do in the 2020 election and the 2022 election? That was exactly, those were some of the ways that they committed fraud using vote by mail. Now, guess who's complaining about vote by mail now? Amid delivery delays by the United States Postal Service and mail-in ballot fraud, Democrats and the media are finally acknowledging there are some issues with mail-in voting ahead of the 2024 presidential election. This is from Epoch Times. As mail-in voting has increased, and it's increased gigantically since the 2020 election, Democrats have advocated for it, saying this is the best way to do it. However, as USPS, you know, a failing government agency, has experienced delivery issues and ballot harvesting has led to at least one redo of an election, some Democrats are saying, hey, there's a problem with vote by mail. So USPS started using a new distribution system last year. It appears to have contributed to delays in mail-in voting delivery. That can affect the delivery of mail-in ballots, both to voters and getting the return ballots back to the elections headquarters. Senator Gary Peters, Democrat of Michigan, sent a letter to the postmaster, that's Louis DeJoy, regarding delivery issues. The nature of USPS network changes has now raised significant concerns, including the potential for degraded rural service due to fewer facilities, delayed delivery of election mail that would be processed at out-of-state facilities, and critical information like laboratory tests not being processed and the like. In February, the general registrar in Richmond, Virginia, told voters ahead of the March primary election to drop off their mail-in ballots at ballot drop boxes rather than sending them through the USPS. And here's what he said. The reports we've received about delayed, misplaced, or even missing mail are deeply troubling, especially as we approach crucial electoral events like the presidential election in November. So, the very same people who are using vote by mail to cheat in elections, and it apparently was working for them for a time, are now the same ones who are now complaining that vote by mail may actually have gigantic flaws, substantial reasons to distrust the system. Yes, the Democrats finally woke up, but I think the real problem was they realized that a lot of the loopholes they were using in the 2020 election have now been erased by states like Georgia that have said, we're going to change the rules. We're going to make it harder to cheat, but easier to vote. And as a result, now the Democrats say they don't like vote by mail nearly as much as they did the last time they cheated almost 4 years ago. Back in a moment, I'll get to your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show. Lots of folks worry about their firearms, but Lars doesn't have to worry about Biden taking his guns. He stores them upstairs. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Big iron on his heel.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you. And of course, we're keeping an eye on what's going on in Israel right now after the attack by Iran over the weekend. Thankfully, thank God, not successful in large part. 99% of the projectiles shot at Israel were simply shot down, and the vast majority did not get anywhere. There was one injury to a 10-year-old child and some minor damage to a military base. So I thought we'd talk about that with Rabbi Yaakov, who is Rabbi Yaakov Menken, Managing Director at the Coalition for Jewish Values. Rabbi, welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me.
Although we've got, I guess, two sources of violence toward Israel. We've got Iran and its proxies, And then we've got the Biden administration, which is making sure that Iran has plenty of cash. So how do we fight that when Israel's friend, best friend in the world, I would think, is the United States, and the United States is helping to fund the people who are shooting missiles and drones at them?
Well, it's obvious that, you know, that things have to change. For the last 3 years, the Biden administration has been practically begging the mullahs to come back to doing the deal, the great deal that Obama had worked out. And of course, Trump voided. They were begging the Iranians. And, of course, they were basically giving the Iranians everything they wanted without making the deal. So the Iranians knew they could just keep demanding more. And they got their money, and obviously they've used that money to fund terrorism, including funding what happened on October 7th. It's just, you know, this outrage, this is not, all these things are not happening in a vacuum. They're happening because there's an absence of leadership that actually recognizes that there's good and evil in the world. Not everybody wants to live like Westerners. Not everybody just wants money and education, and that will make them into civilized people. That's not how it works. We saw that in Germany, where the most supposedly civilized nation and the most civilized leaders and the best academia produce the biggest barbarians. Well, here we are again, but this time it's the Middle East.
Well, and what do we do when, even when the Biden administration sees how its money is being used, they really don't push back hard at all? You've got Houthi terrorists who engage in terrorism now, aimed not just at Israel, but also aimed at foreign shipping, including U.S. shipping. You've got Hamas, you've got Hezbollah, you've got all these players, and now Iran gets involved directly, and the White House is bending over backwards saying, please don't respond to them very, very much at all. You've literally got an American president saying to Israel, its ally, please don't respond to this attempt that, if it had been successful, would have done tremendous damage to Israel on the ground. It didn't, thank God, but the White House is saying, but don't respond to it, or respond as little as you possibly can. How should Americans make sense of that, if they can?
Well, you know, first thing to recognize is that what happened in terms of the number of interceptions, there's a defense expert who went over the figures and said this was a miracle. This was absolutely miraculous that this number of systems in this number of cases all worked together such that, again, 99.9 of the missiles did not get through. And by the way, that only casualty that was mentioned was a Bedouin girl, as in a Bedouin Arab, because Israel is not the apartheid state in that region of the world. So you see that, to what extent the left's lies are even being revealed in this case. Actually, apparently, according to some others, one of the missiles from Iran, it was quite likely to land on the Temple Mount and damage the Dome of the Rock if it had not been intercepted by the Israelis. So is the Israelis protecting Muslim holy sites from the Ayatollahs? So, yeah, there's that. So many things here don't really make sense. And it's a huge wake-up call to Biden and the administration that coddling the Ayatollahs is not a good idea. And now they're telling Israel to, quote-unquote, take the win. Now, if that meant we want to preserve an international coalition to put blistering sanctions on Iran, and obviously if you guys do a successful military response, that's going to kind of take those things off the table, well, I could hear that argument. But I would need to know, and I'm wondering what the Biden administration is trying to tell the Israelis, what is it exactly that they're going to do instead?
Well,
I'm afraid if I take the win, he means just sit around and do nothing. Because that's unfortunately the Biden attitude towards so many global conflicts, is to let them go on.
Or send cash.
Which started with the pullout of Afghanistan. Do the people who supported that recognize that they abandoned basic civil rights for 38 million human beings?
Because, by the way, Rabbi, I've got to ask you about this. So Yesterday, we had major, I guess you can call them protests, takeovers of freeways and bridges in major American cities. San Francisco is one, Seattle is one, Portland's one, Chicago is one, where you had these so-called protesters who showed up, blocked freeways, blocked bridges, in some cases for hours. Today, and this just came down, at Google headquarters in New York City and in California, they have staffers who work for Google, who are unhappy about Google landing a big contract with an Israeli, with the Israeli government, and they literally stormed the offices today in New York City and elsewhere to protest, wearing traditional Arab headscarves and all the rest of this stuff. And this is getting, this is the beginning of it. We're in an election year. Where are we going where the domestic protests, including 80,000 Muslims in Dearborn, Michigan, and things that are clearly affecting what Joe Biden decides to do or not do?
Let's understand. First of all, the keffiyeh is not just a traditional Arab headdress. Traditional Arab headdresses are often pure white. That black and white keffiyeh is Yasser Arafat's headdress. It's a terror symbol. It is about allegiance to terrorism. You can actually tell the difference between a pro, quote-unquote, Palestine demonstration and a pro-Israel demonstration without even mentioning the two. If it involves disturbing, interrupting traffic, standing on highways, you know which side is involved. If it involves disturbing somebody else's religion, and I don't mean Judaism, who interrupted the Christmas tree lighting in New York? Who interrupted Easter services? That you can tell which side that's on. If they're flying American flags, it's one side. If they're burning American flags, it's the other. If they're thanking police, if they come away from the demonstration, police come away saying, I just got a career's worth of thank yous, that's one side. If they got violence against police, it's the other. If there was, if every gum wrapper was cleaned off, it's one side. If there was deliberate vandalism, it's the other. So there's actually a very clear war going on, and it actually has nothing to do with Israel. If they're disturbing Christmas tree lightings and Easter services, I don't know too many Jews who do that. That's not about Israel, and it's even not about Jews. If why is it, somebody pointed this out to me, South America, in South America, Bolsonaro and Milei supporters are flying Israeli flags. What's that got to do with anything? And the answer is that this is a battle about civilization, and Israel, because of where it's located and it represents the Jews, is at the nexus of this battle over the future of Western civilization.
It's a battle between the 21st century and the 14th century, and which one would you rather live in? That's Rabbi Yaakov Menken. Rabbi, thank you very much for the time. Managing Director at the Coalition for Jewish Values. Back in just a moment. Glad to get your calls. And by the way, take his warning to heart. This is not just about Judaism. It's about Christianity and every other religion. You've got the Lars Larson Show.
The 40th President of the United States always knew where to put the blame.
You have blamed mistakes of the past, and you have blamed the Congress. Does any of the blame belong to you?
Yes, because for many years I was a Democrat.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Well, in Seattle, they know they have a big problem of drugs and crime and violence at a homeless camp, and the city just steadfastly refuses to do anything about it. As reported by, I think, our friends at Como News, a growing encampment on a Seattle thoroughfare will not be removed by the city anytime soon, despite admissions from residents about fentanyl use on the public sidewalk that connects Seattle Center and South Lake Union. They talked to one fentanyl user who claims that one of these days when he gets a job and an apartment and a lot of other things, he'll quit using fentanyl. I think he has to figure out that quitting using fentanyl has to come first, but apparently the city knows it has a problem. They refuse to do anything about it, and that is what you're getting it. Bob Kettle, who ran for the Seattle City Council and is quoted as saying he ran on a promise of fixing public safety. His district includes this campsite. He tells Como News he's aware of the issue and he's been in touch with people about a remedy. We still have a very permissive environment. Encampments at one point became a danger. Then it became a drug market. Then it becomes a stolen goods market. We have to engage with these folks with compassion. Do the right thing in terms of finding alternate places. I've got a different solution. Try this on for size. If you're using drugs, you're breaking the law. If you're engaging in the sale or purchase of stolen goods, you're breaking the law. If you're camping on public property, you're breaking the law. And soon enough, watch this. The Grants Pass case out of Oregon that is before the U.S. Supreme Court is going to be decided. The Boise decision, I figure, is going to be thrown out. And at that point, cities better act or explain to their residents why they're not. This segment of the show is brought to you by NickShivers.com for an instant offer to sell your home immediately. No showings, no hassles. You pick the closing date. NickShivers.com for details. Let me go to Sam, who's a naysayer. Sam, you know how much we love naysayers on this show. What do you and I disagree about?
I don't think Israel should retaliate against Iran for their recent attack, because I think it was obviously just a face-saving gesture by Iran, clearly indicating, in my opinion, that they don't want to engage in direct hostilities with Israel. No one was killed. Very minimal damage was done, if any at all. And in fact, I think Israel came out looking even better because they were so successful.
Sam, you have a strange way of looking at things. Somebody shoots 300 drones and missiles at your country, and you manage to fend off all those attacks, and you say that's an indication to you that Iran does not want to engage in hostilities when they shoot 300 drones and missiles at your country?
They telegraphed it 48 hours beforehand.
Yeah, they said, we're about to shoot drones and missiles at your country, and if Israel didn't have such a good defense system, people on the ground would have been killed. A little girl did get hurt, and they did do some property damage, and you're right. Israel came out of it. But to me, it would be like you telling me, well, that police officer was wearing a bulletproof vest, so the fact that I shot at him three times and all three bullets hit the vest and were stopped from killing him, that's an indication that I don't want to engage in hostilities. Would you buy that kind of garbage if you heard it?
That specific instance, no, but this didn't happen in a vacuum.
So if somebody shot 300 missiles at America and America said, we managed to intercept all of them and nobody got hurt, would you say, oh, those people who shot those things clearly do not want to engage in hostilities with us. That's why they told us ahead of time and then shot 300 missiles at us.
Well, in general, I would obviously side with you on that one. But in this case, they were responding to a specific instance, and they knew that 99% of the missiles would be intercepted.
Do you even know what the instance is that they used as the predicate for that attack?
Yeah, Israel blew up the consulate.
Two bad guys. They blew up two bad guys at the consulate.
Iranian generals that were
okay. Now hold on. So Sam, when you've heard about America blowing up bad guys on the ground, are the people that we did that to entitled to attack America?
Well, they can try.
No, hold on a second, Sam. They don't just try. Iran and his proxies have killed American service members. And during Barack Obama, Obama killed 1,900 people using drone strikes in foreign countries. Now, since he was blowing up terrorists, I had no problem with him doing that. But I have a problem with the hypocrisy of people on the left saying, well, you know, we can't have dangerous things being done. Hold on. You killed 1,900 people. Now, like I said, they were bad guys. I'm glad that they're dead. But would you say that having killed 1,900 bad guys, if the people who those bad guys were being terrorists on behalf of could then be entitled to attack America?
No, I don't think they're entitled to attack America.
And yet you were just saying that because Israel blew up two bad guys from the IRG, that Iran was somehow justified in shooting 300 missiles and drones at Israel?
They weren't justified. That wasn't what I was implying. I was just saying that was the reason they attacked. So it wasn't just an out of the a bull from the blue attack.
But okay, I want to go back to your original statement. You said that clearly somebody who shoots 300 missiles and drones at your country is trying to send the signal that they don't want to engage in hostilities with you. You really believe that?
Directly. In this specific instance, I think it's clear that Iran doesn't want to engage in direct hostilities.
That's why they, hold on, they don't want to engage in hostilities, which is why they shot 300 missiles and drones at a country. Sam, I got to tell you something. You're going to have to work on that one. You're not persuading me yet. You got the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson.
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Look, if you hate cops just because they're cops, the next time you get in trouble, call a crackhead.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
Then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. I got to tell you, I get a lot of emails from people saying, Lars, this transgender thing you keep talking about. Well, why? Because it's very, very consequential. As far as I'm concerned, there can't be too many things in this world that are more important than protecting children, including very young children, from being chemically or surgically mutilated by America's healthcare system. And I think that's a serious concern. The other concern, and I mentioned to you, that yesterday we found out about a track meet that happened over the past weekend where a boy who identifies as a girl managed to come in second place in the track meet. If he had participated as a boy as he used to, he would have come in 61st place. And there were a lot of girls who lost to him in that competition because they're girls biologically. He's a boy biologically. I don't care who he identifies as. He's a boy, and he managed to run a whole lot faster than all of them. And so you say, is that a big deal? Yeah, it's a big deal when you talk about chemically or surgically mutilating children and when you're cutting children out of opportunity. So when I saw what happened in Idaho with a brand new gender law, I knew I needed the details. And I thought we'd get them from Jay Richards, who's director of the DeVos Center for Life, Religion, and Family, and the William Simon Senior Research Fellow at Heritage. His brand new book is called Fight the Good Fight, How an Alliance of Faith and Reason Can Win the Culture War. Jay Richards, welcome, and it sounds like this is a win, or at least a win of a battle in that culture war.
It is, Lars. In fact, it's one of the first bills that actually does this. Your listeners might be surprised to know that states in general have not ever defined sex, and in fact, they've never defined what male and female is, but have all along been assuming we know the difference between male and female. But because of movements by the Biden administration, basically to blow up the genuine category of sex as a biological reality, so a few states figured out, oh, you know, we actually need to define what these are. But it's harder than you think it is to do it in a legal context. And Idaho, believe it or not, is one of the first states. I'd say it's the first state to really do this the right way.
Well, and in fact, I guess it can be hard enough that one member of our current Supreme Court, who is a woman, or at least by all accounts she's a woman, can't even define what a woman is. So is it really that hard to define that? And I understand some people are going to throw examples like hermaphrodites at us and say, yes, there right. are occasional departures from the norm, but they're outliers. They're not the majority of people. You're either male or you're female. And I understand that there are some medical oddities. I'm not intending to insult anybody by saying that, but they fall sure. outside the norm. So how did Idaho manage to do it?
Well, they worked really carefully to get model legislation that some of us that have been on this issue for a couple of years had worked to develop. Because as you said, basically when you do, here's the problem, is when you define something for purposes of law, if you say everybody's male or female, and here's what makes you male or what makes you female, if somebody can find one counterexample, that blows up the law, because that definition means that all those that fall into this category, they apply. And so some states thought, okay, well, let's say XX and XY chromosome, which is what most people kind of think. That's actually not what sex is. Those are sex-determining mechanisms. Sex is about the reproductive strategy of organisms. And so the kind of most basic way to define sex for the plant and animal kingdoms is the reproductive strategy in which you have two differently sized sex cells, so-called gametes, ova and sperm, that fuse. And when they fuse, it produces a new member of the species. And the male's the one with the small mobile gamete sperm, and the female is the one that, at least under normal development, has the large immobile gamete, the ova. And then you say you have to take that into account. Then you have to take account, okay, what about people with so-called disorders of sexual development, right? And right. So they turned that into kind of an interesting formula in which you have a male, the individual that naturally has had, will have, or would have, but for a genetic or developmental anomaly, the gamete that the small mobile gamete. I mean, this is a, you know, you have verb tenses, you got to account for the disorders. And states have been trying to do this for a couple of years, but finally converged on a definition. And Idaho's the first one to get it across the finish line, but there are actually several other states that are in the process of doing the same thing.
Maybe they should share that with Ketanji Brown Jackson, and she could educate herself for her future years on the Supreme Court, since I'm sure we're stuck with her for a while. But this helps to get us to that ultimate solution that says, hey, we're going to be able to tell male from female, and then we can go from there when it comes to jobs or employment or opportunities at school or athletic competitions and things like that. Does this get us in that direction?
It gets us in that direction, and when the Biden administration changes the definition of sex in Title IX, which they're about to finalize, states can say, look, we have a non-arbitrary way, based on biology, to separate men and women's sports, men and women's bathrooms, and things like that. Because at the moment, states are mostly doing this, but they don't have it anchored in their definitions. And what we'd like is for the Biden administration to have to argue in federal court that biology doesn't apply to human beings, which is their position. But I don't think they want to have to argue that in federal court. That's what laws like this will force them to do. So it will raise the issue of what's really at stake in gender ideology away from the kind of equivocation and ambiguity of the language they use to the very question. Look, are we a sexually reproducing species? Does biology apply to human beings? Or are we these kind of woo-woo internal senses of gender called a gender identity, and our bodies are just sort of shells that we could change? It's going to be one or the other, but that's the argument that we want to have happen. It's the argument that the other side has been avoiding all along.
Well, and like I said, I mentioned the track meet example, but years ago, I knew in passing a young lady who was one of the best runners in the world, Mary Decker Tapp, and she got faulted all the time because her own doctor said, look, she produces too much testosterone naturally, but she is clearly a woman and she runs against other women, and she actually had to take drugs to bring her testosterone levels down. Mm. Are we going to be left with that for every single school that wants to say boys run against boys and girls run against girls?
I mean, that's a perfectly fine scenario because that's a very rare condition in which you have a female that has unusually high testosterone. But the reason we separate sports is that individuals, males that go through male puberty, their bodies are different in all the relevant ways on average that make them dominant in the sport. And so if a man can just identify as a woman, and then get allowed to compete against women, what we're going to have is a bunch of men pretending to be women in all the top spots.
Well, the
whole point of Title IX is to avoid something like that.
Well, and what happens in employment law? If somebody walks in and says, I realize this company wants to up its number of female workers, so I'll just go in and mm-hmm. tell them I identify as female, and they'll be forced to hire me. And if they don't hire me, they'll be looking down the barrel of a lawsuit because I'll say I identify as a female. You must hire me. It's going to create all kinds of bizarre connotations. Jay Richards is the director of the DeVos Center for Life, Religion, and Family. He's also at the Heritage Foundation and the author most recently of Fight the Good Fight, How an Alliance of Faith and Reason Can Win the Culture War. Jay, thanks so much. I appreciate your time. We'll be glad to get your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, we will put you right to the head of the list. If you disagree with me, we want to hear what your disagreement is, as long as you're willing to stick around for a couple of questions after that. 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com.
Nixon was wrong about a lot of things, but he's right about this.
People have got to know whether or not their president's a crook.
What say you, Joe Biden? This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm always glad to get to your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@larslarson.com, and you can always vote in our poll on X. We posted two places, on X at Lars Larson Show and on our website at larslarson.com. In a moment, I want to give you some details on what's going on in Denver. There is a citizen revolt going on there. I mean, not armed people in the streets or anything like that, but they have 40,000 illegal aliens in the city. And finally, people in at least that city, and it's a fairly liberal city, have awakened to the idea that a lot of their city resources are being diverted from services to citizens to illegal aliens. And believe me, the citizens in that city, at least some of them, are not very happy about it. But I want to get some of your calls first at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@larslarson.com. Let me start with Paul. Hey, Paul, you called in, you told the producer you want to talk about the trans issues that are going on. Welcome to the program, and what's on your mind?
Thanks, Lars. I'm an old guy, kind of like a little confused in today's market. Listening to everybody talking about trans people, transgender changes, I've been curious. Number one, has there ever been a human being in the history of humanity that has changed their sex? From what I've read and heard, we have people going through cosmetic surgery to change their appearance.
Yep.
And being an individual that I have to see to believe, to me that's like putting lipstick on a pig.
It is. And all they're doing is they're changing the cosmetics. Although, God help us, they're also talking about uterine transplants and things like that that may come up in years ahead or maybe decades ahead, although some of that stuff seems to be flying along at a real pace. I mean, the pace of change is dramatic. But has there ever been? Well, I mentioned that there have been hermaphrodites who are born with both male and female.
They were not changed.
No, they were not changed. So the question is, when medical science encounters that, and there have been doctors in the past who said, this boy or this girl appears to be, you know, more boy or more girl, and sometimes they've done surgical changes to try to let that person grow up with one gender rather than both, because both really doesn't work. But whether there's been anybody who's actually changed, I know there are animals that will change gender from time. I think frogs, some of them can do that sort of thing. But no, I think the answer to that generally is no. Let me go to Don. Hey, Don, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind today?
Yeah, I even sent a text on Twitter to Speaker Johnson of the House. Well, I'm just thinking, well, all this lawfare trials going on in New York City on President Trump, and Letitia James went after him too on a federal level. Well, I asked him, see if we get a grassroots movement going here to defund New York City the next fiscal year.
You're talking about take away all their federal funds?
Exactly.
Yeah, can I tell you
reduce New York State's two-thirds of their fund to two-thirds of what they get.
Well, so in other words, all the federal money. Now, they get a considerable amount of federal money, but to do that, you'd have to pass something through the House with a slight majority of Republicans and through the Senate with no majority of Republicans, and it would have to get Joe Biden's signature. I'd say snowball's chance is the likely assessment of how likely that is to happen. So why ask him for something that isn't going to happen?
Well, let them know a lot of the people are not happy the way their antics is going out there in New York State, in New York City.
No, I understand that. But if you want to cut federal funding, there's one way and one way to do it only. And that is pass a law in the Congress saying we're not going to send funds for New York City to respond to its massive illegal alien invasion. But you'd have to get a majority in the House, a majority in the Senate, and Joe Biden's signature. And you have, at best, one out of three. And you might not even have one out of three. You might have zero out of three. Let me go to Neary. Hey, Neary, thanks for the call. What's on your mind today?
All right. Regarding our justice system, it's for the people, right?
It's
theoretically, yes.
Left or right, right? Okay. So it's supposed to be impartial, right?
Theoretically, yes.
Supposed to be impartial.
Yep.
Now, my question will be, earlier I heard in the news that it's very hard to find jury that don't know who Trump is. So it's very hard to find impartial jury. Now, my question will be, so we lower the bar for what's considered as a felony or what's considered as a misdemeanor in the case of Trump. Now we want to lower the jury selection bar?
No, because, Neri, there's only one thing you misstated. You said you want to find people who've never heard of Donald Trump. Well, in the United States, that would clearly be a near impossibility for anybody who's never heard of a man who was already famous before he became president and became more famous after he became president. But the requirement to be on a jury is not that you don't know the person. It's that you tell the court, I think I can impartially hear the evidence, the state's case against the defendant. And this applies in every single case. So you say, I want to be on the jury. You know, if they're interviewing you and you say, I believe I can set aside any preconceptions I have about this person, listen to the evidence and the case against him and his defense case, and then make an impartial decision. That's what they're looking for, not people who've never heard of Donald Trump.
That's true. However, and that's what I meant by saying not heard of Trump. It's not forming any opinion of Trump. I don't know anybody that doesn't have any opinion of Trump for or against. So that's the question that I have. So how would you indict somebody on trumped up allegations, and then you will have a certain juries that is inherently biased.
And by the way, Neri, that's exactly what Alvin Bragg and his friends want. They want a biased jury. They want a jury that will find Trump guilty. And it's very plain that that's exactly what they intend. They intended to bring a fake case against him. They intended that he be convicted. They just have to go through the motions. So I don't think there's any secret that Alvin Bragg doesn't care if he gets an impartial juror. And I don't think Judge Merchan cares if he gets impartial jurors. He wants them to convict Trump, except they've got to appear to be doing something that appears to be fair and under the law, while it's at the same time not. And I have a feeling that even those people who are sitting on the jury, they've seated six jurors already, and they say, well, I know who Donald Trump is. I may have an opinion about him, but I can set that opinion aside. I have a feeling that even some of them are going to be on the jury, and they're going to already decide he's guilty before the trial even begins. And I think that's exactly the way that they have designed this, because the goal of Alvin Bragg and the judge and the court system in New York State is to find Donald Trump guilty of something to get in the way of him running for president. And that's exactly what they intend to do. It's our job to make sure they don't do that. Glad to get your calls. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show. Gun Control Explained.
Want to stop drunk drivers from killing sober drivers? Ban sober drivers. That's how gun control works.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. You know, this may be the perfect metaphor for describing just how crazy the Biden administration is. And I'm not going to expect Larry Behrens necessarily to agree with me on this. He might. But Joe Biden is going to both increase and decrease the cost of fuel and oil at the same time. And if you say, Lars, he's going to increase the cost of oil? Yes. And he's going to decrease it at the same time? Yes, he's going to do both of those. And we'll get into the details. Larry Behrens joins me now with a group called Power of the Future. Larry, welcome back, and tell us, first of all, let's talk about what Joe Biden is going to do that is going to increase the cost of oil production and hence fuel at the pump for Americans.
Hey, Lars, thanks so much for having me. And anytime a price is decreased, I'll get on board with that. But to answer your question directly, just last Friday, as the Biden administration usually does, they wait till Friday afternoon and they make these announcements that they're going to raise fees. So anytime, which particularly happens a lot out west, anytime there's oil production on any federal controlled land, Joe Biden has raised the cost of getting those permit fees. And he's also raising the cost of what they call rent, of saying, this is what, if you're going to keep using and producing on this land, we're going to have to keep charging you as well. And this is in addition to what producers already pay in taxes from the oil that they pull out of the ground. And so these are all costs that are going up. And if it goes with everything else that has happened since the beginning of this industry and since the beginning of time, when government throws a increased cost onto companies, those are passed on to the consumer.
Now, Larry, you offered me an opportunity to sandbag you, so I'm going to do it. Okay. Larry, would you like to increase your monthly income by $1,000 without much effort at all?
Yes, I would.
Okay. I want you to go to your family's emergency savings, and every month for the next year, take $1,000 out of your emergency savings and just spend that as though you made it. You've just increased your monthly income by $1,000, and all it took was probably to pull out your smartphone and transfer the money from savings into your checking account. You got it done. Now, would you be in favor of that kind of savings?
Absolutely not. I don't think any rational American would.
No, but the irrational American in the Oval Office, the oil industry analysts are saying that he is probably going to go raid the Strategic Petroleum Reserve again, the way he did 2 years ago when he took about a third of it out, 200 million barrels, and he used it to try and bring down prices by a tiny amount. And they expect, this is what the oil industry analysts are saying, he's going to do it again. Because earlier this year, the Congress said, here's the money, let's refill the reserve. And the Biden administration said, no, we're not going to refill it. It sounds like they may be aiming to raid it. So he can pull out oil for a while and lower prices for a while. But just like your emergency savings account, Larry, it eventually goes dry. And then your income isn't as big anymore. But it was for a while.
Yeah, and that's such a great point. And, you know, just like if you were to pull money out of your emergency savings account, and maybe, you know, you're worried that your job stability may not be working out or the car may need a new transmission, all these things that emergency fund is supposed to be set aside for, if you use it now, it's not going to be there when you need it. It is the same with our Strategic Petroleum Reserve. We see a world that is growing more unstable by the day, thanks to a lot of Joe Biden's policies, and he is spending our nation's strategic oil account just to use it as a strategic political reserve. I mean, as we sit here right now, there's about 360 million barrels of oil. And that sounds like a lot until you consider we as the United States use about 20 million barrels a day. So all in all, that's less than 20 days left in the Strategic Petroleum Reserve because, to your point, Joe Biden has drained it more than any other president in history.
Well, and in fact, one of the little tricks he's played is by telling the Congress, I'm not going to refill the reserve, even though Congress set aside money to do it. And we could have done it back when Trump was president and oil was 30 some bucks a barrel. And the Democrats said no that time too. But if he doesn't refill the reserve, he's leaving that money or that oil in the marketplace, which has the effect of holding prices down a bit. And as a result, even during that time, you've pointed out that the cost of a gallon of gas has gone up about 20 cents while they've been not buying oil out of the marketplace to put it in the reserve. So it would be, again, go back to your family emergency savings account. If Larry normally says, yep, every month I put $500 into our emergency savings against a rainy day. And then your wife says, well, how about we don't put it in for the next few months? Well, then you're $500 ahead of the game. Of course, your emergency reserve doesn't get any bigger. That's what he's been doing with oil. He's been manipulating the price to try to hold it down. And now it looks like that's not enough because prices are still going up. So he goes to raid the reserve itself. And I pointed out 2 years ago, it was 200 million barrels he took out. If he took out another 200 million, we'd be left with, what, 160 million barrels, or a quarter of what the reserve is supposed to hold?
Yeah, you're exactly right. Let's say our Strategic Petroleum Reserve is the gas tank of all of our cars. Right now, the needle is on half. I mean, or just below half, right?
Right.
And so when he wants to take out more without, you know, going by the gas station again, to continue to stretch the analogy, that's where we are. And when you say he did it 2 years ago, Americans need to be asking themselves, what was going on 2 years ago? Well, first of all, we had the highest gas prices in the history of the country. But second, he was worried about midterms. And you know what? For a cold political operative like myself, kudos to Joe Biden, because he saved losing the Senate probably by, you know, making us more vulnerable and using the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. But he's going to go back to that literal and metaphorical well again this year. And, you know, hopefully we don't have a hurricane. Hopefully we don't have something that, you know, will require a real emergency for our Strategic Petroleum Reserve.
Well, and Larry, there's nothing going on in the world right now that could bring trouble to oil supplies, is there? I mean, there's nothing going on in Taiwan. There's nothing going on in the Middle East. There's nothing going on with, say, bombs falling on refineries in either Russia or Ukraine or a little bit of both. There's none of that that's likely to cause trouble that would mean we'd actually need the emergency reserve for a real emergency. I mean, we're not facing that kind of situation, are we?
No, you know, it's really funny. Of course we are. And Joe Biden is falling all over himself to send emergency money to these countries, but he doesn't think that we here in America need emergency oil. I mean, that's why I'd be interested in telling Congress, you know what, if we're going to pass more billions for these foreign countries in this time of instability, why don't we carve out a little bit of that money for the United States so that we still the Strategic Petroleum Reserve with American oil? Because you have to specify American oil, because otherwise Joe Biden will go back to Saudi Arabia and beg them to make more. Then he'll just buy it from them.
Or maybe he can buy American oil and then sell it on the cheap to China, because I think that's part of what happened during the sell-off from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. Didn't some of that oil end up going to Joe's Chi-Com buddies in Beijing?
It absolutely did. And you know who else bought oil, or you know who else China bought oil from? Was, you know, our now good friends in Iran. Iran had a record oil year despite being under sanctions. Joe Biden has looked the other way for Iranian oil sanctions and allowed them to have record oil production and rake in billions of dollars. And I mean, I couldn't tell you, what did Iran spend those billions of dollars on?
Yeah, it's curious what they do, because as I understand it, the relief from sanctions, meaning the sanctions are still there, it's just they're not enforcing them at the White House. So they said, yeah, we'll leave the rules that Trump put in place, but we'll just ignore them and we'll let everybody know we're ignoring them. Is it 4 million barrels a day is what Iran is producing right now? And you multiply that by $80 a barrel, and that's an awful lot of cash.
Absolutely. And their biggest customers, to your point, is China and Venezuela. It is, you know, dictators dealing with other dictators behind, you know, not really behind Joe Biden's back, because he's openly allowing it to happen. But when we talk about unfreezing billions for Iran, yes, we absolutely should talk about that. But we should also talk about the fact that Joe Biden is more than happy with Tehran taking in billions in oil money while, you know, an American company in Midland, Texas tries to figure out how they're going to pay higher fees.
Exactly right. Larry Behrens with the group Power of the Future. Larry, thank you very much. Back in a moment. I'll get to your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest. When it comes,
be singing what I'm singing, but I'm just saying what you're thinking.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Tuesday. Glad to be on the Radio Northwest Network, which has now, for quite nearly a quarter of a century, served the Pacific Northwest states, Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. We provide honestly provocative talk radio on a daily basis. Now, our poll on X today: should citizens allow Joe Biden to tap into America's emergency oil reserves again to try to eke out a win sometime in November? Because oil industry analysts are saying we fully expect that that's what Joe Biden's going to try to do, tap into those reserves again. As I've told you before, the Strategic Petroleum Reserve can hold about 710 million barrels of oil. Except today, there's only about half that much that's sitting in the reserve. So imagine saying, I always want to have an emergency savings account of at least $1,000. Well, how much is in it now? 500. Okay, so you're only there, and you're going to take some more out for a non-emergency. If that makes sense to anybody, I'd love to hear the naysayer call. And I had an email earlier today from a young lady who said, you must be crazy. Americans don't have anything to say about whether or not Joe Biden does or does not tap into the country's emergency reserves. Well, as a matter of fact, we do. Because I've seen so many examples of where public pressure will actually cause a president to either do something he wasn't going to do or fail to do something that he was planning to do. So I think the question is reasonable. Should citizens allow Joe Biden to tap into America's emergency oil reserves? My answer would be a flat, hard no. But you can answer any way you like. At Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for your business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Yesterday's poll, can Donald Trump get a fair trial in a very left-leaning New York City? 96% of you agreed with me and said no to that. Only 4% of you said yes. I swear sometimes just there are people who vote on the other side of those things just for fun. I did want to mention this. Out of Bellingham, the city of Bellingham just spent $1.2 million to buy a piece of land. Now, did they buy it to build housing for people who actually want to pay for their own housing? Nope. Did they buy it to, say, have a big new development in the city of Bellingham? Nope, they didn't do that either. They bought the property in what's called the Birchwood neighborhood because they want to site a brand new tiny home village for homeless people, meaning you're going to pay for it. They're going to live in it. They're not going to pay rent. You're going to pay all the costs. But then I thought the story got even more interesting. The Center Square had the best version of this. But they said the new location is going to replace two existing homeless villages. So you can imagine how popular it's going to be in the Birchwood neighborhood when they say, guess what? You've got some new neighbors. They're going to be moving in. And if you say, well, what do they do? You say, they don't do anything. They're homeless. Well, do they have any problems? Well, yeah, they've got some drug addiction problems. They've got some criminal problems. They've got behavior problems. But you're going to love them. They're going to be moving in right down the street from you. But here's what's happening. The city right now has two existing villages for homeless people that, again, the taxpayers paid for. But the current Bellingham City Code, which, by the way, the codes apply to all of us, says you can't have a tiny home village in one place permanently. It only allows tiny home villages to operate in the same location for 2 years. Now imagine how liberal they're being with this. And when I say liberal in Bellingham, you know what I'm talking about. You can have a tiny home village that violates city code, but you can only have it in one place for 2 years. But then the city can allow up to 3 one-year extensions. Now, the last time any of you had to deal with a code issue, did the city come to you and say, you're currently in violation of the code, but you don't have to do anything for 2 years, and then we'll give you 3 one-year extensions. Do the math on that. Has the city ever come to you and said, your house violates city code, but we're going to let you get away with it for the next 5 years if you choose to do that? And yet, that's exactly what the city of Bellingham is going to do. They say the future village will be subject to the code as well, meaning they're going to site it in a neighborhood. It has a 2-year permit, but then they will give it 3 one-year extensions on that permit, meaning they're going to build the kind of housing that would not be legal to build for you or for me or for anyone else who lives in Bellingham. But for the homeless folks, they're going to let them be there in violation of city code for up to 5 years, and then they're going to apparently pull up stakes and bulldoze the thing and move somewhere else. Now, get this. If you thought $1.2 million was all of it, no, the estimated cost of construction is going to be $900,000. That's for what they call the tiny home village and the initial setup. Cost will include installation of utilities, and amenities like electrical, plumbing, kitchens, laundry, and storage, plus replacement of houses and common areas that can't be reused from the previous villages. So you've got one of these little garden sheds. I mean, they're a little bit bigger, maybe, than the ones you'd find at Home Depot or Lowe's or one of the big box stores. And I would imagine after somebody's been living in that for a few years, it's a good question to ask, how many of those are they going to reuse? And then they're going to put in all the electrical and the plumbing and the kitchens and the laundry and the storage, $900,000, and in 5 years, they're going to have to move it again. Now you know how your tax dollars are being spent, at least in this case, in the city of Bellingham, Washington. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.